A new season.
I think that the belief is that this group does have it.
A fresh start.
But obviously we haven't proven that yet.
Before. You're living in the past. Quit living in the past.
Leave the past in the past.
I know that, deep down in this room that we all believe in each other.
It's time to lace them up and...
grip it or rip it.
You're listening to Leafs Lunch with Julia Tucheri and Michael DeStefano on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Leafs Lunch is brought to you in part by 2-for-1 Pizza. Right now, enjoy 2-for-1 Pizza's Detroit-style pepperoni pizza for just $9.99. Call 2-for-1 Pizza, 02-for-1. Welcome back, Leafs Lunch. Hour 2 continues. The Leafs picked up a 3-0 victory in preseason action over the Montreal Canadiens tonight, but probably more newsworthy today, if you're just tuning in right now, is the fact that RFA defenseman Rasmus Sandin has finally put pen to paper with the Leafs. With the same deal, seems like he's been offered all along, but the preseason game last night, if you missed it, was extremely bizarro.
Yeah. Bizarro is probably a better term to use there. I mean, when you've got Cali Yarncroak and Alex Kerfoot as part of your top 4D, I guess, for the better part of 2.5 periods, bizarro is a good term.
Very weird. We're going to have Julie Stewart Binks on in the next couple minutes. We'll chat about just how bizarro this was. You're right, AB. I had it written down backwards in my notes. I should just keep them on the computer and not write them down. Dahlstrom goes down with a shoulder injury. Ben goes down with a groin injury. Sheldon Keefe said he had a little bit of fun. Honestly, we know he likes to put stuff in a blender. We've seen him do it time and time again. And last night, he mixed in some really new ingredients with those couple of injuries.
Yes, to say the least. But like the fact that they were able to shut out the Habs with having two forwards playing defense for so long is like just like astonishing to me. Like it's just so bizarro is honestly it's just the perfect word for it. It's just so bizarre that even happened.
Okay, highlights from last night. Matt Murray shutout has to be number one, right?
Yep.
Face 16 shots, plays 40 minutes. I set the standard for him yesterday. I said, Samsonov did it. 40 minutes, 16 shot shutout. He did exactly that. And
he didn't face a whole lot quickly before we, I guess, move on. But like Matt Murray didn't face a whole lot of action. Like, he used 16 shots.
Yep.
And I was looking, the average shot distance for Matt Murray last night, 45 feet from the net.
Don't you feel like he needed a game like that, though? Like, that's such a confidence booster.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good...
It's like a soft, like, work your way in. The crowd was feeling him.
Yeah.
Okay, we didn't... He picked up an apple. Like...
It's true, he did.
Sweet stretch pass to Nick Robertson to pick up an assist in his first unofficial game for the Leafs. So, he did outdo Samsonov before really getting down to the nitty-gritty.
Because he's got the apple. So, they both... 16 saves? But
exactly.
Murray's got the assist.
That's what pushes him over the edge.
Secondary,
I think
though.
He needed a game like... Was it a secondary assist?
Yeah,
didn't go Murray Gio.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he needed a game like that. If he would have gone in and gotten peppered,
it would have been the sky is falling. Would have been the sky is, well, not the sky is falling. It's a little hyperbolic.
No, but I just mean like, if he would have had to face a lot. Like, it wouldn't have been fun. He just looked comfortable back there.
I would have preferred it, actually. Like, if he made a 16-save performance and had to make 6 or 7, like, big-time stops, grade A saves, I think I would have felt better about that.
Yeah, fair enough. But I just mean for him personally. Like, I'm not talking about us and our confidence. I'm talking about him going in the net. He looked like he was handling the puck pretty comfortably, too.
Yeah. Well, he's a good goalie, right? Yeah. He's had a tough couple of seasons, but there is a good goalie in there.
Yes, there is.
So they just need, to bring it out of him.
They're finding him. So, they're finding that dog in him.
I mean, if they can keep it low event, which is something that Ottawa couldn't do for him in the last couple of seasons, I mean, then Toronto should be okay. And that's the thing, when they have been able to do that. Like last year, I think they were sixth in expected goals against, like played pretty low event hockey, didn't give up a whole lot. If they could do the same thing with either of these guys, Murray and Samsonov, I think they'll be in a decent spot goaltending-wise. Health aside, obviously, which is another question mark for Matt Murray.
The other highlight, if you're a Leafs fan, Nick Robertson gets a goal last night. And it's probably one that he wanted. I was thinking back to the last time that Nick Robertson scored, and I don't even know what it counts as in the bubble. He scored in the bubble. That was his first NHL goal, and for the longest time, I don't think there was anything...
He scored one goal last year.
His
he did
first.
Score one last
oh,
year.
Oh, right. But his first one...
Yeah.
they didn't know it counted for the longest time.
Like, because it was like, do these games count as playoff games? Do they not?
They count as regular
season. Yeah, it was kind of bizarre. Like, there's no fans there to celebrate it.
Ghost goal. You know where there was fans to celebrate last night, though I don't know if they were celebrating this. Aaron Judge.
So,
let's talk about this.
Well, have you been just like, is there a name that you've said more today than the name Frankie Lasagna?
So, I thought when I first saw the name Frankie Lasagna that it was a lie and a prank and a joke. Like, I couldn't believe that was his real name. It's the most iconic handle I've ever
heard
in my life.
Such a good
and
handle.
And the man owns an Italian restaurant downtown. I was looking up the menu before we came on the air today as part of my pre-show research, obviously.
Right, yeah.
And menu looks fire. I'll be there at some point in the next couple of weeks. I can imagine business.
Well, it'll be booming. Booming for Frankie.
Frankie Lasagna.
Frankie Lasagna will have some a lot of lasagnas to be made over the next couple of weeks, I would assume.
Okay, just before we bring JSB in, no lasagna on the menu.
What?
That has to be rectified.
Like tomorrow, call it the Judgian Lasagna.
Yes.
Call it the Judgian Lasagna.
Or is Aaron Judge's enemy? I don't know. Let's ask Julie Stewart, host of Drinks with Binks on Fubo Sports. Julie, how's it going this fine afternoon?
Hey, guys. It is great. I didn't even realize it was afternoon until you said that, so I appreciate that update. It was a late night here in New York. Of course, you guys just mentioned Aaron Judge, and then we had Mets winning in extras, so it was a lot of baseball. I know we're on a hockey show, but it was big baseball night over here.
Well, we're appreciating what was going down, because it happened right here in the city, right? Right in the six, down at the Sky Dome.
Mm-hmm.
And the handle of the guy, Frankie Lasagna, so close to catching that ball. But, I mean, what was the buzz like last night in New York, where you're based out of, where Aaron Judge just makes history, becoming the first player in 61 years to hit 61 bombs in the American League?
Okay, so first of all, I just need to get clarification. Frankie Lasagna was the guy in the powder blue jersey?
Yeah.
Or in... Okay, so, but then the other guy was closer.
The bald guy.
Right?
Yeah.
He ran away, though, and Frankie Lasagna is now a famous celebrity in the city of Toronto.
The other guy who threw his glove at the guy behind him, I kind of want to know what his deal is as well, but Frankie Lasagna is the better handle.
I resonate with the guy that threw the glove more, I think, but it's neither here nor there.
I used to have, like, a six-part series done on, like, the guy that threw his glove that, like, we don't know, and we've kind of now just, like, gone full Frankie Lasagna. Because I was just watching ESPN doing highlights of it, and they were talking about Frankie Lasagna, and I'm like, well, wait, what about the other guy? Like, we've now just sort of anointed Frankie Lasagna. Great, he was also very close. But the other guy was definitely closer, at least, like, on whatever all the different angles we're looking at. Again, they would have had to have thrown themselves over to get it, I believe, and probably injured themselves. Might have been worth it. Not sure. Moot point at this time. But yes,
free healthcare in Canada.
Okay, so.
I mean, it's not like you got to pay for the health bill if break your shoulder.
In. My gosh, yes. yes, stay as long as you can with that free healthcare. But back down here, what was so wild, like, I was just filling in on Sportsnet New York, and I remember thinking in my head, like, he's going to do it tonight. Like, I know it. Just because I'm, like, randomly there, I'll be on doing it. And my co-host, my co-anchor on Sportsnet New York, like, it's Mets Network, so it's a lot of people that work there are obviously Mets fans, but also a lot of Yankees fans. So it's a very split newsroom. It's sort of very interesting dynamic. So me and my co-host, Michelle Margot, we were, like, trying to do a TikTok about how Aaron Judge hadn't hit it yet. And we were just, like, going back and forth. And we figured out what we were going to do. And I was like, he's at bat. I'm like, he's going to do it. And, of course, like, he does it. And we were like, oh, darn, we can't do our TikTok now. But, of course, obviously, it was, like, incredible to witness history finally, because you're sort of, like, thinking, you know, it's the eighth game without a home run. Like, when's it going to come? Blah, blah, blah. But really, all they needed was to win the AL East, have a couple of wobbly pops, and then hair of the dog, right? Like, Garrett Cole had an incredible start as well. So, you know, you never know. Playing guilty might help out a little bit. And it was, though, very exciting. Like, we had our just the guys were just like, everyone was just so excited, because you think about it, and then, and you're like, oh, that's an incredible feat. But when it actually happens, you just realize in history what an incredible player he is, what an incredible historic season this is. What I love is that it happened in Canada, because, like, I don't know if that would have had the same reception in other ballparks, but Canadians are the best. they all understand and recognize the gravity of the moment is bigger than, like, whatever's going on in the game. It's like, okay, this is really cool that we're here for this special time, and seeing Matt Bushman, you know, bullpen coach, give the ball to Zach Britton, gives it to, you know, whoever. I mean, that ended up in Judge's mom's possession. But, like, that felt, even though Matt Bushman is not Canadian, it felt so Canadian for him to do that.
Yeah.
And I said that on air. I was like, I just love that. Even though, like, he should probably get some cash or whatever. I don't know how this goes down.
He should, absolutely.
It was great. But I also love that it, like, came against Toronto. I'm a Toronto Blue Jays fan and Leafs fan, but I was like, of course it would come against the Jays. But, like, we all recognize and accept it. So, yeah, it was a very exciting night in the Big Apple.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And I think, like, a lot of Torontonians were kind of excited to see it. There was a buzz.
It was cool.
A lot of people went down over the course of the last few days to try and witness history. And, you know, they ended up getting the game-tying home run, I guess, that they could see. And I think it's perfectly sets up because the Yanks going back into the Bronx now so he could break the new record in Yankee Stadium.
I know.
I think it'd be awesome.
Oh, it'd be wild on Friday there. Oh, like, it's going to be crazy. Tickets are already crazy, too, because, you know, just to welcome them back after winning the AL East. I know it's hard to say that because it's like Toronto's obviously, you know, still trying to get the playoff spot as well. But, like, it's just, it's exciting when the Yankees are doing well. And also the Mets, too, had a great night. Like, I had many people messaging me for different reasons. Like, wow, great night. And then I have to be like, what fan are they of what team? Because, like, both teams were really excited about it. So, hey, that's like, you can't ask for a better night when you're working, so I was pumped.
What do you think would be, like, the hockey equivalent to that happening?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like, I was trying to think about this. I was having a discussion with a friend. Like, what would be the hockey equivalent? Would it maybe, like, if Austin Matthews snaps 93 this year, would that have to be the equivalent of that? Like, is that the $2 million puck?
Maybe, but, like, I still don't think it's, like, the same level as, like, not only a baseball record being broken or being tied, but, like, then also the Yankees, which is, like, I mean, the Leafs are like the Yankees of hockey. So, yeah, I guess you could say that. I don't think it would still have the same, like, gravitas as just, like, you know, this team in this city is, like, runs this city, and this city is the biggest in, really, you know,
the world.
North America.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the world. Yeah, so it's, like, a little bit different. But, yeah, I think that's a good question. It would be something to do with Austin Matthews doing something so incredible that, like, it takes people away from other, like, that wouldn't be a fan or be interested, right? Like, it kind of transcends into other sports, into other areas of life where people would be like, oh, I don't follow the Yankees or follow baseball or whatever, but, like, that's a cool feat, and I understand that that is impressive. So for hockey, yeah, okay, Austin Matthews, like, breaking Wayne Gretzky's record someday.
I'd love to see it.
It's like,
that's Julie.
You'd love to see it, you know?
That's Julie Sturt-Banks on the phone, transplanted Toronto Maple Leafs fan in New York. A lot of buzz around the Yankees right now, obviously, but the Rangers season getting geared up to go. And after so much success last year, what's the buzz like around the Rangers right now in New York?
I think it's good. I think it's better than it was before really the season started, because there was so many question marks about who was going to fill in for a lot of the guys that came at the trade deadline last year that worked out. A lot of the wingers, like the Andrew Copps and Tyler Motz, Frank Petrano, like guys that kind of filled in the cracks between, like, the bigger names in a way. And then, of course, with Ryan Strom going to Anaheim, and then kind of seeing, like, you know, Igor Shesterkin played a ton of games last year, and kind of like, what's he like? What's his backup like? Like, Louis Domingue, you know, he was playing for the other night, but, you know, Georgiev is also going to be interesting in Colorado. But yeah, it's good. Like, you want to see kind of like, how does Sammy Blais look like with the top line? Like, he was out all last year and he kind of forgot about him. And then Kaapo Kakko, how he was scratched and getting sick last year and he had injury ridden season. Like, what is he like? And there's a lot of interesting bright spots too, with like Jimmy Vesey coming back, sort of his like round two comeback in a way. I mean, he had a good season in New Jersey and he's, you know, been all over the place, but I love seeing kind of I don't want to call it a comeback story, but like just the sec, like if you were to go back to a job that you had before and maybe like you weren't as great at it, and then you come back and you're like, I'm wiser, more mature, like I can deal with this. I don't want all the hype around me. And we saw him score a power play goal in the exhibition game on Monday. And so that was good to see. And of course, Keandre Miller, like absolutely incredible. Like he was like the Lainey Bogues of sort of like the Rangers coming back and being like, oh my God, like we knew he was really good, but like, holy cow, he took off his glasses and was like, holy smokes. Yeah, go ahead.
Like, he's one of those players, Keandre Miller. Like, he's one of those guys. There was a clip floating out there on Twitter the other day of him just, like, getting into the ozone, chipping in, getting an opportunity, playing. Like, they're playing the Devils. And I just saw it, and I'm like, man, what that guy did the playoffs last year, and if he's making plays like this, right, like, he's a guy who I'm really kind of circling as maybe, like, a new young breakout star defenseman coming into the year.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, if you're seeing him go coast to coast like that, like there was a highlight from the game against the Islanders. I mean, he didn't score on that one, but he scored in that game. And was he shorthanded? I forget because it's also like I woke up really late because I was up late last night doing highlights of the Mets game. But yeah, it's, you know, when the Rangers are good. The thing is like they got so far last year and you're just curious, like how is like Trocheck and any of these guys like going to work with like Panarin and then Kreider up top with Mika? Like they're obviously like the twins together. They kind of have that like Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaf feel when, to date myself, I'd go back way, way, way when they were just had like incredible chemistry. And so then you see like, how are you going to, you know, kind of like the Leafs, like you have your big names in place, but like where are you going to fill out the rest of your roster? And I liken it to my fantasy football team, right? Like I spent a lot of money getting Josh Allen in my auction draft, and then I was like, uh-oh, like I gotta fill this bad boy out, but like I've got my star at least, you know? So yeah, I can kind of relate to Kyle Dubas, really. I mean, we're kind of in the same boat here, so obviously joking, but I'm excited to also see how the Leafs do too, because Julia, you know, the last time I watched a Leafs game was from quarantine at the Royal York.
So tragic.
That's right.
Scotiabank. Oh God, it was the lowest low of my life. Like I was sitting in my bed crying because I was like, this is just a bad moment of my life.
It was so sad. I couldn't go to that one either. We were all close contacts with Frankie, so we couldn't go to the game. It was like the saddest thing in the world that we all missed game 7.
You said that.
And then they lost and it was even sadder.
That's a tough one. Well, I was a very diligent mask wearer, so no one got taken down because of me. I got taken down because of someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But everyone else was protected. But yeah, I very vividly, just as a quick aside, like for anyone who's listening, like I was supposed to be on that game 7 for TNT, but I got COVID. And then I was in quarantine in the Royal York, like, and you could hear the goal horn go off you would see it on TV. And I'll never forget, like, so then, you know, I'm unbiased, obviously, Big J Journo when I'm doing Tampa and Toronto. I've done that kind of stuff before, blah, blah, blah. But then once I'm in quarantine, I'm back to, like, Julie Toronto Maple Leafs fan because I got nothing anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and I remember it was, like, 2-1, like, time winding down, and I do not hear that goal horn go off. And I remember just being, like, like, I literally just, like, collapsed on my bed.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. It's so defeating. And the season has such a weird vibe going into it because, like we've heard time and time again, the whole regular season doesn't matter. It's just those couple of weeks in April that matter when it comes to the Leafs. Is that just in Toronto where that vibe?
They were close.
Is it just in Toronto where that vibe exists, or is it the same kind of notion in the States right now when it comes to the Leafs?
I mean, it's obviously amplified in Toronto because it's like you don't even look at the particulars or the context or anything, and you could be like, go back through all the games of last year against, again, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions and be like, these are the moments we could have, like, beat them. And then, as we've referenced before, so many times John Cooper said in the Stanley Cup, like, well, we look back to, like, game 6 against Toronto, and it'll be like, wow, man, like, you've gone so far through the playoffs. And you're, that's a tough one for Leafs fans to hear because you're like, ooh, you were so close. But my boyfriend's a big Rangers fan, and we've talked sort of time and time again, like, when they lost game 6 against Tampa, like, he was he was in a bad place. And you think, like, is it worse to go out in the first round, or is it, like, worse to go out while you're so close to the Stanley Cup? I mean, the answer is it's worse to go out in the first round, so you want to go as far as you can. But the hope that kills you of getting so close really does hurt.
It does. So, like, I remember having that discussion last year. It's like, I'd rather get swept than lose in another Game 7. And I said that, like, the day after losing Game 7. In hindsight, you probably are happy that you got a few W's and you made it to a Game 7, you got to witness it, but in that moment, in that time, yeah, you're just a bitter fan. You're like, no, they should have just, why even bother with the playoffs?
We were reeling emotionally
why
at that time.
Why even bother with the playoffs? It's hilarious. We're chatting with Julie Stewart Binks, Drinks with Binks. We're having this discussion off air a little bit, actually. I'm not sure if you saw the Trevor Zegras hit last night. Jan Janik kind of caught him. And yeah, we thought it'd be really disappointing if he ends up missing some time. He's one of the more flashier and entertaining up-and-coming NHLers in the league. And we were going back and forth, like, who would be some of the top players that you would think are some of the, like, must-see guys when they come to the city? So I'm curious, who are some of the players that are on your must-see list when they come through to MSG?
Well, first and foremost, kind of like Toronto, I'm definitely not getting any tickets because it's so expensive at MSG. I'll be watching Sam and Joe on MSG from my apartment. And I know it's not, like, flashy or, like, well, maybe it could be flashy, but I'm still just, like, very interested in seeing all of the guys that have gone to new teams. Like, I just no idea what it's going to look like for, you know, in the regular season with Nazem Kadri in Calgary and Jonathan Huberto there, and then Kachuk in Florida, and just, like, everyone going to a new school and kind of, like, seeing, like, oh, yeah, like, what's it like for them there? And then, like, did they make the right decision? Well, it's almost like a drama or some kind of, like, housewives type of thing. Like, ooh, how does this work out for them, you know? So I'm just interested to see, like, all these crazy moves that happen in the off season and then in real life. But I guess, like, the younger guys coming up, seeing, because it feels like the younger the guys are, the more, maybe it's, like, the less they worry about some of the consequences and they're more prone to, like, doing the cool moves, like Sonny Milano and, of course, Trevor Zegras, like, everything that they've done, like, different cool stuff that these guys are doing. It's like the kids, the Gen Z's on TikTok, and you're like, wow, like, I can't believe they came up with that. Like, that would take me 5 days to think about that. So I guess it's, like, some of the younger, maybe, like, a Shane Wright or, like, Seth Jarvis, very curious about. Lafreniere, I think, will have a big year as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Laffy's going to break out. And not to be, like, a New York bias, but I think he's got a lot of potential. But what about you guys? What did you guys say before?
Well, one of the names that I brought up, I mean, there's the obvious, Cale Makar, McDavid, Matthews, and all that, but one of the guys who I brought up that I'm excited for, I think also will have a big, like, breakout campaign this year, is Jack Hughes, who's someone you would probably be familiar with, you know, being in the tri-state area. But I think Jack Hughes is one of those guys that I really am going to want to make sure I get a glimpse of him this season. I think it's going to be a special one for him.
Yeah, I mean, him and a lot of the Devils kind of, like, fly under the radar because of just, like, where their team is. Like, you know, they're up against so many sports in the New York area. It's kind of like Anaheim Ducks, or even, like, to a very lesser extent, the Kings get more coverage. But over in Southern California, you know, you're up against so many other different sports and teams that, like, you don't always get the eyeballs on there. So you kind of, like, miss some of this stuff. So I think you're right about Jack Hughes, like, that. He's going to be very interesting to watch. And who else was I thinking of? Maybe, like, Tim Stutzla and Rasmus Dahlin, too. Those are two I think are going to be
Dahlin.
Dahlin's
an interesting little pick there. That's an interesting one. Julie, really appreciate taking the time to join us. We'll definitely catch up again down the road.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I, like, tore my neck last night sleeping, so this was a nice little pick-me-up here while I stay here icing it. So, thanks.
Go get yourself one of those cheap, like $35 massages that I get every time I'm in New York City. Oh, it always helps.
Yeah, Julia was just here, and she, like,
I didn't know that was a thing. If I saw $35 massages on a building, I don't know if I'd feel safe to go inside.
You know what? Once you live in New York, everything's okay. You're just like, whatever.
Exactly.
If you see five rats running down the street, you don't even bat an eyelash, honey.
Those five rats were me and my friends this past weekend.
Yeah, you should have had up Julie while you were down
I know. I was in a blender this weekend, really.
We each other, and then we just didn't connect.
Just didn't happen.
We were both in our own stratospheres, yeah.
All right, Julie, really appreciate it. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. There she goes. Julie Stewart Binks from Drinks with Binks.
She's such a hoot.
Always a fun interview.
Yeah, she's great. I love her. I love her sports takes, and she always makes them so fun.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you got to have fun with sports, right?
We do. It's sports. Like, we get so serious here. We're like, the Leafs, they're all injured. Whatever shall we do? And it's sports. We're chilling.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to pull them. Be like, you know what? Yeah. Like, we have a little bit of fun.
Tiny knife skates. Frozen glass. Frozen ice. Like, it's all good fun.
Really quickly, I do want to give a shout out to a fan of ours. I know he listens every single day. I think Matthew Bauer, M.W. Bauer on Twitter.
Ooh.
Big fan of JSB because he decided to tweet it and be like, JSB. Be on my birthday. Cool.
Happy birthday, man.
Shout out. Happy birthday, Matthew. Thanks for being a Leafs Lunch loyal listener. Really appreciate it.
Loyal listener.
On the other side, we'll kind of update what's going on around practice today. We got some quotes kind of starting to filter out and the media kind of telling us what's going on down there. And then we'll take a look at some of the players who are on the fringe of the roster. Are they lock or are they not a lock? Coming up next on Leafs Lunch.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Yeah, it's obviously a challenge when you lose a couple guys, but I thought Kerf and Cali did a great job going back there. Made it look a little too easy, made us kind of look bad a little bit, but good for them to come back there and help the team close out a game.
Morgan Rielly. A man of, like, kind of few words, but they're all hilarious.
Yeah, I like Mo's media scrums.
He's so dry, but he's so funny.
Yeah,
like,
he's got
funny.
That dry humor.
He didn't giggle at all as he said that, but it was funny.
It was. And, like, they did. They looked all right. I mean, I know, they're playing. It was a preseason game.
Yeah.
It means absolutely nothing. You look at the roster on the other side, it was a bunch of, like, junior-age eligible players and, you know, AHLers. For the most part. I get that. But it was still kind of fun to see. And it was still interesting. Like, Kerfoot legitimately, like, walked the line at one point.
Yes!
Walked the blue line and, like, made a pass. And it was like, yo, that guy kind of looks a little Cale Makarian.
Oh, I mean, my gosh,
it wasn't bad at all. I do have to say, because we were kind of texting back and forth when the injuries occurred. I'm like, oh, no, Gio's got to play 30 minutes tonight.
I'm thinking about Mark Giordano. The text I sent was, oh, my God, Mark Giordano, that amazing man, is pushing 40 and is about to push 40 minutes tonight. Like, what are we doing here?
But only ended up playing 22 and a half minutes.
Not bad.
Right? Morgan Rielly limited to just 23 minutes, 19 seconds. TJ Brody, 23 minutes, 6 seconds. Mete played 19 and a half minutes. So they were able to, by putting in these kids, because they didn't just run 4D, which if it was a regular season game, that's what would have happened, obviously.
Right.
Because it's a preseason game, that doesn't mean anything, and you don't want to, you know, put a lot of miles already for no reason. They're like, all right, let's see what our ultimate Swiss Army knives can do in Yarncroc and Kerfoot. And they ended up playing like a good chunk of their night on the blue line. Not even up front, on the blue line, which was hilarious.
And they got all the love from Matt Murray. We played that clip off the top of the show.
Can we play it again? Because, like, it was honestly, like, legitimate. Did we play it at the top? Oh, it was part of the
It was the, part of the montage.
The opening montage.
But before anyone even asked him a question, he came out to the media scrum and he said this.
You know, I thought the guys did a heck of a job. I got to say something about Cali and Kerf playing D. I mean, the way they stepped in and they were making reads, they were making breakout passes. It's like they weren't missing a beat. So pretty impressive on their part. Thought the whole team played extremely well. We had a great penalty kill. Guys were blocking shots, kept them to the outside for the most part. So it was a fun game to be a part of for me.
It was fun. It was honestly fun to watch. I was entertained.
It's you know, it was Murray's first game, so it's like it's an interesting game to come into.
Yep.
But don't you also kind of think like that somewhat like there's a little bit of adversity there, like that maybe build some camaraderie with the group in
it's
a way.
Funny.
Like, do you think that's possible that happened last night? Like,
I'm with
know.
You on that. They'll laugh about that for a while.
Yeah,
I think.
Remember that time Yarny played like literally 2.5 periods as the number one right shot defenseman alongside Morgan
also,
Riley?
I didn't say anything, but our producer Steph, we have a list on our little lineup in front of us of the left shot and right shot defenseman. Yarncroke is included on the list of defensemen. Was that you?
Maybe. But Alex Kerfoot also. Why don't we hear from Alex Kerfoot? Because yesterday he was speaking to the media after the game and how he felt playing defense for the first time in the National Hockey League.
I don't know. There's elements, I'm sure, that I was lost out there a little bit. But in D zone, it's not too different than being a centerman or being the low forward. And then, I don't know, it's just reading and reacting. You play 3-on-3, 4-on-4. In the summer, you play all different positions. So just trying to do your best out there, not skate backwards as much as you can. And just get the puck up the ice and play on offense.
And that's one of the biggest differences, realistically, is like skating backwards as a D-man. It's like, if you can't skate backwards, skate, you're a winger.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you find out when you're 10 years old. And that's almost sometimes how you find out if you can hack it as a defenseman.
It's true. And Kerfoot said he was avoiding.
Yeah, he's like, I try to avoid that as much as possible. Yeah. Let's turn the hips and get going north-south as opposed to backing her up. But you know what? Good on them, right? Ultimate teammate saying, you know what? Yes, I will take on this challenge, and I'll go play the blue line. And it's funny because they're always touted as the Swiss Army knives, right? Like Kerfoot for the last couple of seasons, either wing position, toss him in the middle, toss him on the PK. He could go up on the power play if need be, first through fourth line, doesn't matter. He'll do it. Like, he's an ultimate Swiss Army knife. And that's kind of what Yarncroke was billed as, too. Little did we know that included in that resume was defense. And here we are, getting that opportunity.
Are we giving Alex Kerfoot enough love? And does he get enough love on a day-to-day basis? Like, so I actually have to say this. This is really funny. Right now, trending on Twitter, literally, is
probably
just
Kerfoot?
Nope. Just the Leafs.
Okay.
Hilarious. But trending very often on Twitter, you're right, is Kerfoot. He was a guy that, like, since the expansion, when that video of
the
announcing
fish.
The Leafs pick with the Kraken, they filmed a whole bunch of different options, and I suppose the Kerfoot one got leaked. Since just about then, people have thought that Alex Kerfoot on the move. John Tavares goes down, half of the team's defense corps goes down, and Alex Kerfoot is that guy that steps in. And I know Yarncroke exists now as a Swiss Army knife type of guy as well, but is this making Kerfoot look like a little bit less expendable?
Absolutely. When Tavares went down, one of the first thoughts that went through my mind is, well, you can't trade Kerfoot anymore.
No,
like, you need him,
but you're always one injury away from needing him.
And I think that's why, like, general managers are good at what they do, right? Like Kyle Dubas, we're sitting here, we're trying to make the cap work, and we sit here, we look at the fully healthy roster and try to make those decisions. But he's got to think of sometimes worst case scenario. What if John Tavares gets injured and misses time? What if Austin Matthews gets injured and misses time? Like, especially going into this season of all, where it's like no one cares about injuries. There's no more excuses. If Tavares goes down, you better have someone who could step up and still be able to get the job done. And if you ship out Alex Kerfoot, who's one of those players who, yeah, is he a second-line player in the NHL? Probably not. Like, is he playing a little higher in the lineup than he should? Yeah, maybe. But ultimately, he is a guy who can fill in a pinch and get it done. Because after that, it kind of drops off. Luckily, Yarncroke is in the picture now as well. Can, you know, go and fill in some of those minutes. But ultimately, you know, Alex Kerfoot is a guy who can do a lot of things. And he does do a lot of things with this team. Plays in all different positions and all different aspects of the game. He's not as expendable as maybe the a lot of the fan base. You know, I can even put myself in there that I was talking about throughout the summer. Because one injury away to one of those big dogs, and ultimately, he becomes an important piece of this team. There's not enough depth down the middle. They're quite thin. Like, what do you want? David Kampf being your second-line center? If an injury occurs, if you move out Kerfoot? Probably not.
No, Alex Kerfoot had a 51-point season last year.
Yeah, and I think 43 or 45 of those at 5-on-5. So, you know, and that's a true indicator of some production and success. Like, he literally outscored both Nylander and Tavares at 5-on-5 last year.
Yeah.
And only enough people know that or talk about that. But
no, and people get a little bit uppity about that.
It's the contract. That's what it is. Because if Kerfoot was making, you know, Cali Yarncroc money at $2.1 million, I don't think there'd be nearly as much noise to move this guy. But at 3.5, with the big boys making so much money, that's really the biggest issue with Kerfoot. Like,
right.
I think he provides value. Like, if you stripped away salary cap, I don't think anybody would be saying, get this guy off the roster.
No.
We need to move on from him because he's a valuable piece and he can help this team in many different ways. But with that cap, it factors in.
It
right?
is the salary cap, though, because I think if you look at Alex Kerfoot and you just isolate him as an individual and his cap hit and his production and how valuable he would be on any NHL roster, like every coach, like ask any coach what they want in a guy. They want versatility,
yeah,
and availability. Obviously, you said
yes.
The best ability is availability,
and
but a guy who you can trust to play anywhere
yeah.
is so valuable and pretty rare. I think if you just look at him and isolate him and take salary cap away and what the other guys are making away, like, it's not an unfair deal. It's not a bad contract.
It's not. But it's a bad contract on this team.
Yes.
Right? And that's the issue. Like, if he was making $3.5 million in Arizona, no one's saying boo. You're not going to have the guys on Yotes Lunch screaming off, oh, Alex Kerfoot's making
lunch.
Too much
that's
ASU
a student
lunch.
Radio station.
That's right. You're not going to have the people out there at ASU Radio Sports Talk sitting there spewing off, got to move this guy. He's making too much money, yada yada. But here in Toronto, when you've got so much money allocated to those guys, it doesn't work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, there are guys around the league, and you look at it and you say, he makes less money, and he probably could do a lot of the similar things. Like, Cali Yarncroc is somewhat of a Alex Kerfoot mold, right?
Yes.
He makes $2.1 million. $2.1 million. That's almost $1.5 million less.
Right.
And he can give you, arguably, the same type of production and the same type of minutes, has a very similar versatility.
We have an interesting note from practice from our guy, Jonas Siegel.
Okay.
Tell me your thoughts on Morgan Rielly taking reps on the right side.
He did that early in his career, if I'm not mistaken.
When he was a young lad?
Young lad, young Mo. I don't recall it going very well. I mean, he was young, so he's a different player, but I mean, it's preseason, it's camp, this is when you try things.
I guess they've got so many injuries right now.
Yeah, like, I don't anticipate him playing on the right side. But, like, how would that work? Who's he playing on a side with? Is there, like, a roster out there? Like, who's his partner? Who's
no,
on the left?
No, he just said, of note at Leafs practice, Morgan Rielly taking reps on the right side.
Yeah, I mean, it's notable. It's notable, right?
Interesting.
But that's what training camp is for. To get sure. reps, to do certain things, to try different things, see what works, see what doesn't, you know, so that you're not, like, if something happens at some point this year and Morgan Rielly has to play the right side, it's not completely foreign to him because he did it in a few practices, I guess, as opposed to being, like, years ago where he was able to do that. But I wouldn't be looking into it. I don't think Sheldon Keefe is sitting there penciling in Morgan Rielly as first pair right shot defenseman come October 12th.
You know what? I actually forgot. Maybe it's not the contract that so many people dump on Kerfoot for. Someone immediately tweeted us and said, yeah, Kerfoot could do a lot like give away the puck in game six.
Okay, but it's been prior to this season that people haven't liked
yeah,
Kerfoot.
Like, you know, when something like that happens and it just sticks out in people's minds?
Yeah. I mean,
that's funny.
There's a lot that happened in, you know, Alex Kerfoot's career, I suppose, where some Leaf fans on him, but a lot of the discourse this year was more so the Leafs need to create cap space. He makes $3.5 million, somewhat expendable with Yarncroc in the fold now. He should be the guy who gets dealt, and I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen anymore with John Tavares. This injury kind of just shows how thin they are. Maybe they can't really afford to move on from a guy like that.
Yeah,
secondary piece. Oh, we'll see. we didn't really get into a lot of what was going on in training camp, but a couple other things going on in camp that we can kind of note and talk about on the other side. Looks like some of the lines are starting to come out a little bit, so we can chat about that. One more lap around the track, JT. You listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
You better lock it up. You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. You lock it up. Lock it up. Lock it up. I don't like the feeling. Am I interested? I'm not really interested. Should I play like I'm interested, but I'm not that interested?
Okay, if they don't want to lock it up, we'll lock it up. And we'll talk about some guys who we think are locks for this Leafs roster. Some lines, maybe D pairings that we think are locks or not. Just before we get there, of note right now, the second group seems to be on the ice. Jake Muzzin is skating alongside prospect Joe Miller on the third pairing of the second group. Riley's taking reps on the right side with Kokkonen. So some vets playing with some prospect. I saw your, did I say that wrong?
Kokkonen?
Okay, no, no, good. I didn't. I thought your face changed when I said that. I was like, darn it, I thought I got it right.
No, anyways, no, all good.
I
think. I mean, who knows these days. I also don't call Abruzzese. I call him Abruzzese. No, that's what they call him. Abruzzese.
Yeah, there
the
we go.
Correct
there
way
we go.
To say it, though.
Lines starting to take place at Leafs camp. We're starting to see what this team might look like. And surprise, surprise, Bunting, Matthews, Marner, line one.
Mm-hmm.
Duh, lock that in forever and ever and get it tattooed on my arm.
Saying what? That's the thing. Remember last year we were trying to come up with like what to call the line? Got to come up with some sort of like three, like a
if the
so
Leafs,
you could get a heart, like one that doesn't say mom, but a heart with whatever acronym you could toss in there or something.
If the Leafs won the Stanley Cup, I would consider a BMM tattoo
Ooh.
Somewhere on my body. I would consider it. But we'll talk about that as we get closer. Nylander, Kerfoot, Yarncroke for line two. Do we feel like that's something that's going to stick around, at least for the time being, while John Tavares is injured, presumably, for at least the first week of the season?
That, honestly, feels like a lock to be the line two.
Where's my boy?
Without JT, yes.
Denny.
Gino Mulligan, who scored again
Rip
last
for
night,
him
by
last
the way.
Night.
Thought he actually had a decent game again. Decent showing.
Yeah.
Drew a couple penalties. I think he got an apple as well on the final goal. Like, Denny Mulligan is, at this point, maybe one of those guys who is proving, like, hey, man, I'm out here too, right? I'm out here too. Maybe he's an injury away to one of these, you know, one of these guys to getting an opportunity on the second line. But I think ultimately, yeah, Nylander, Kerfoot, Yarncroke, in the absence of John Tavares, seems... Is it a 100% lock? No. If I'm going to put a numerical percentage on it, 85% lock.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an 85% that will be locked in as the second line on October 12th.
I'm into that as well. I think I'm ready to even go a little bit higher. I'm closer to 95, even with that being the second line. The third line, I'm so into, and I hope that it's a lock, though it might be better if Simeon Durek and Chinsev was the centerman here. Just like, you'll see why in a second. Zach Aston-Reese, David Kampf, Abe Kubel.
Ah, you want the all dash line.
I want the all
hyphen
line.
What a great handle
line.
That would be. The dash line or the hyphen line?
Oh, the dash line is so much better because it sounds bad, but it's good.
Yeah, that would actually be pretty sweet. Although I don't think SDA is someone I would... that's not a lock for SDA to be a third line center for the Maple Leafs.
But oh, baby, am I ever into this line. That is a tough third line to play against. That is a fast first line. And that line will win every defensive zone face-off again the way that they did last year.
That's what Keith wants, though. That's what Keith wants. He wants a hard third line who can go out there and be defensive. Anytime you got a D-zone face-off, get out there. You know, Kampf, Aston-Reese, and Abe Kubel, get out there. Now, it's interesting. I know we only got a couple of seconds here, but it's interesting that Aston-Reese is, like, considered more of a lock on this roster to me than a guy like Wayne Simmonds or a guy like Adam Gaudette, because he's still chilling with a PTO.
Yeah.
He's not even on a contract with this team yet. Yet he feels like more of a lock for this roster than either of those depth guys.
I think that changes. I'm going to guess, and I have no insight as to this, the next 24 to 48 hours. I think that Sandin signing maybe clarifies
that a little
bit. Taking
up a lot of the headspace of Doobie. Now that that's done,
not
let's
even
move
just
on.
The headspace. Just like, okay, what do we have here? Like, what can we offer this
guy?
And now they know for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. So perhaps that does happen. The fourth line, there's a lot of like non-locks, I guess, out there on the fourth line. But I was, you know, maybe we can pick up on this a little bit later on as we get closer to camp.
The fourth line is so wide open that it needs its own segment, I think.
It might. Maybe we can pick up on this tomorrow, perhaps. But that does it for today's show. You can find it on tsn1050.ca if you missed it or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch. I'm sticking around with gameplay next.